The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. All discussion is limited to publicly available information and should not be interpreted as legal, professional, or financial advice. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license nor provide any financial services. Before making investment decisions, you should obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor.
Hi everyone, it's Neil Rogan here from Russell Investments, and today I'm speaking with Alex Eicher, who is the CEO at GlobalX ETFs here in Australia. Alex, the ETF market, as we know, has been growing very quickly. And one thing I think everyone loves about ETFs, including myself, is that we can see how investors are behaving in almost real time, because these ETFs are traded daily. We can see turnover, liquidity, etc. So really today, I want to explore with you, given your role and your insights into the market, to really unpack how investors have reacted and acted during the recent geopolitical tensions that we've seen in the Middle East, which really started around 4 or 5 weeks ago. So I suppose March and April were very volatile. Can you tell us what the Australian investors have been buying, firstly? And then I want to know what they've been selling. Or should I ask you what they've been selling and then what they've been buying?
Are we even flip-flopping in between two or three different ETFs, backwards and forwards?
Have they been buying and selling the same things in the same week?
Thank you for having me back on. So March. Now, normally, I think with the amount of geopolitical uncertainty and clearly the war inflation spike, we would expect mass redemptions in things that are super liquid like ETFs. We didn't have that, actually.
Oh, really?
So the first interesting stat is that there were positive net flows across the ETF industry in Australia again. Over $5.5 billion actually came into the Aussie market, which was a surprise, which took us to over $15 billion for the quarter. So it's a record year, year on year, on any measure that we've had. And there have been commentators that have said, well, you know, ETFs will really suffer during periods of real stress. And that didn't occur as well. So we had strong flows, not the strongest, but strong flows into the industry. Assets under management fell, but that's expected because markets had fallen. But the trading volume and the amount that was traded was also at a record high. So through the period of March, there were over 2 million ETF trades executed in Australia. And to put that into perspective, the previous record was April 2025, as you remember, Liberation Day.
Yep.
Yeah, and that was 1.7 billion. So 1.7 million and 22 billion of trading. In March this year, over 2 million trades and 26 billion turnover through the ETF market. So extraordinary. ETFs were very stable. Trading conditions were good. Everything worked as is expected, and investors were able to invest and liquidate as you'd expect with the ETF market.
And was that predominantly institutions, you know, rebalancing into the market, or is this?
No. So it depends on how you define an institution, but if you're defining institution as the large, big superannuation funds in Australia, the answer is no. It's mum and dad investors, brokers executing on behalf of their clients, financial advisors, asset consultants, managed accounts are a big component of the Australian ETF market. And so at the high level, we had significant inflows again into the industry. But then when you look into the detail, there were some interesting things that we can unpack. So first of all, the rally in the oil price and inflation shock with the closure of the strait. There's only one real oil ETF in Australia, and it performed very, very well, as expected. But what was interesting, I was watching this real time, where you would have trades coming into that particular ETF, say $30 million, $50 million, even $100 million into the ETF. But then as quickly it was going in, it was also coming out, and there was trading in between a cash ETF and that oil ETF. Now, I don't know if it's always the same clients, but people were moving in and out of oil as it was quite volatile. So it wasn't people allocating and staying put. They were actually moving in and out and executing their particular market view very, very quickly with that oil ETF. So that was one standout.
So it's like day trading an ETF.
A couple of days. I see the creations at the end of the day. And some people may hold for a few days when their view changes, when, you know, there's a different tweet from the president of the US. Their view may change very, very quickly and they're in and they're out. So that was one. Defense technology was popular as expected, but it wasn't we didn't see standout flows in defense technology. There was about $30 million that came into defense. So think about one ETF, DTEC. And I think most of us will be aware that there is ongoing and increased investment into defense technology by countries around the world. NATO have been very, very public about investing more into defense. But then the other angle or the other aspect of defense is it's moving into the private sector too. So resorts, sporting facilities, big stadiums are investing into defense technology to protect themselves from the potential attack of a drone. Mm-hmm. So defense technology has been an interesting trade. Then Australian equities, surprisingly, had the best month ever, a record month for inflows into broad-based Australian equities.
Wow.
So that was about it was over $1.5 billion across all Aussie equity based ETFs. And I mean, it's hard to put down what actually drove that, but I presume for Australian investors, they're familiar with the underlying companies within those ETFs. Perhaps there's a larger allocation to resources and materials, commodity based companies within the Australian sector. You could argue that they're kind of more value-based rather than growth-based companies.
Yep.
And Vanguard, who are the largest ETF issuer in Australia, had a record month. So they had over $2.5 billion in their ETFs. And into VAS, which is the largest ETF in Australia, $880 million flowed into that ETF. So I imagine that's a lot of advisor-driven and managed account flow coming into that. Another observation was the rotation out of US equities, and maybe Australia benefited from that. But US equities were already pretty expensive in the lead up to March. And then the focus on software, SaaSmageddon, that sort of stuff. So we did see flows coming out of US-based ETFs. And if I looked at some of the data, ex-US ETFs, so it could be global equities ex-US. They had the best month ever, so $418 million into ex-US ETFs. That's four times larger than the previous record. Europe was the big beneficiary there. Record flows into European ETFs here in Australia, $275 million. That was five times larger than the average. Japan was a beneficiary. Constant positive flow into Japanese equities, $157 million. Three times larger than what we'd normally see. And I know at Global X, our research team has been talking about the broadening trade, if you like, so moving beyond borders and beyond the US. And so we have seen that play out through March. Oh, there were good flows into Australian inflation-linked bonds as investors were worried about inflation spiking up. And that was $100 million. Into an ETF here by iShares, and that was five times larger than what we'd normally see. Floating rate bonds were popular. And our ETF bank, which has subordinated debt from the banks, was popular. And then the other interesting thing was, although so globally technology is a little bit on the nose because of the SaaS trade, Australians proved to be contrarian, and there was some significant flows into Australian technology.
Oh, really?
ETFs, yeah, which was also a surprise. Yep. The other thing, there was positive flow into Australian crypto ETFs. Now, globally, 6 months straight, there have been redemptions out of crypto or digital asset ETFs, whereas in Australia, we've seen 6 months, not big, but we've seen 6 months of positive flow into crypto-based ETFs. So Australian investors are behaving a little bit differently to global investors. Another one, there were outflows out of global corporate bonds, specifically global high yield, probably unsurprising given the state of the markets. And gold was actually pretty quiet. So we're a large issuer of gold ETFs. And there was, despite all the uncertainty in the world where you would expect a lot of flows into gold, there wasn't. So we in Australia, across all the entire ETF industry, there was only 30-odd million that was invested into gold-based ETFs. And we would average probably about 140 million a month into gold ETFs. Whereas in the US, there were actually outflows out of gold ETFs. Yeah.
So I'm quite interested because we did have this gold rush in the lead up to this happening. Why do you think people, because traditionally people buy gold when, you know, there's something unsettled in the world. Why do you think they sold at this time?
Yep. So gold had an amazing run, as did silver.
Yep.
Before March, but the momentum was already slowing through February. And then I guess the geopolitical risk premium comes and goes pretty quickly in markets. And you know, gold is there as a diversification tool. But what happened in March, gold actually fell, and it fell significantly. So gold fell from 5,400. Was basically intraday touching sort of 4,100. It closed down about 12%. And so in an environment where you would normally expect gold to do well, provide meaningful diversification, in this case, it's not the first time, but it didn't provide the kicker that some people would have expected. So I guess that's for investors, it's a reminder that gold is a diversifier, but it is not a pure hedge for a portfolio.
So do you think the role of gold has changed?
No, I don't think the role of gold has changed at all. But what we had through, you know, late stages of February and beginning of March, we had a lot of fast money trading gold. And so this would be CTAs, hedge funds, just, you know, in and out, right? And basically they started to liquidate their positions very, very quickly in March. And that was almost like selling everything. Then we had a deleveraging from, I guess, more wholesale advisor-driven portfolios, predominantly out of the US.
Yeah.
Option-based strategies started to unwind. And so that fast money, the tourists, if you like, basically exited the gold market. And we're now left what looks like to be the fundamental long-term investors. Yes. And so gold's role in the portfolio is to provide diversification. Has that role changed? No, it hasn't. What was unusual through March is that central banks typically buy the dip, and we didn't. And based on the World Gold Council data, central banks were not buying in the early period of March, but in the back end of March, they did. China started to come back into the market. And since the lows of gold, it's rallied 20%, but it's still off about 11% from its highs. And the thing about gold is it has lots of demand or use cases. So there's the industrial element, there's jewelry, and of course there's the investment case for you and I, financial advisors, mums and dads, and then central banks, institutional clients to hold gold in their portfolio. So industry kind of takes up about 8% of gold usage, jewelry 30-35%, and then, you know, investing, central banks sort of 60-70% of gold. So I think the long-term case for gold is still there. It's a useful diversifier in the portfolio. It tends to do well when we have US dollar weakness, when inflation is there, or falling real interest rates with inflation rising and then geopolitical uncertainty. So the long-term case is still there. And even looking at investment bank, or the largest investment bank forecast, JP Morgan, their forecast, I think they're still at, they're still 6,300 for their forecast. So that's more than a 30% increase from where we are now. And looking at here, I can see Goldman Sachs are at 5,300, whereas gold is sitting at 4,800 right now.
So there's room to move.
It certainly looks that way. Yeah, the case for gold hasn't changed.
Yep. So just in the time we've got left, there's this thing about the halo trade. Do you want to explain to me what that is?
Sure. I touched on SaaS-mageddon, which is the software names have been really sold off around the world with, you know, AI basically coming in and replacing a lot of what software as a service did. And, yep. and what we've seen as people have exited software, they moved into HALO, which is basically the acronym stands for heavy assets and low obsolescence. So, you know, big critical infrastructure. Once it's put in place, it's very hard to displace it or replace it with technology or anything like that. So significant investments have gone into this type of infrastructure. So, you know, transportation, the traditional infrastructure, rail systems, ports, toll roads, etc. Energy infrastructure is very, very big. And one theme that we're seeing at the moment is AI infrastructure, along with it, with this halo trade idea.
So data centers, water.
Exactly. Yep. And I think if you ask anybody on the street, who is the winner from the AI race? Is it ChatGPT? Is it Gemini? Is it Claude? People don't know, right? Yep. But the one thing that's for certain is that AI has changed the way we do things. We're using AI. More and more people are using AI. And the requirement for energy has gone through the roof.
Mm.
So that we know. So rather than investing into, the, I guess, the tech software side, you can see allocations going into AI infrastructure. So I think I mentioned there's only one AI infrastructure ETF available in Australia, but that'll give you exposure to data centers. It'll give you exposure to power systems all over the world, the power grid expansion, but also the materials and minerals that go into fueling these data centers. So copper is a feature. So mining is hard to replace. It's a heavy industry as well. Uranium as an alternative source of energy as well. So that's the halo trade, and it's a beneficiary from, I guess, the SaaS-mageddon at the moment, which I think is overdone. It's probably unlikely that companies are going to build their own sales force themselves or build their own zero accounting and expense system. Perhaps we see that turnaround. In fact, in not March, but in April, there has been significant flow into big global technology from Australian ETF investors. And the one that comes to mind most is FANG, which is really large, big tech. That has seen a lot of flow in the first week and a half of April.
Wow. Well, Alex, I know we could talk about this, particularly the halo. I want to talk more about the halo effect, but I think I'm going to need to get you back on. Thank you for sharing your insights today about the flow of money. I think over the coming weeks, we'll see even more flows of money, and it may be very different to what we've seen in the last month and a half. But as always, thanks for coming on and really appreciate you taking the time today.
No, pleasure. Good to see you again.